Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from New York City. Today, the latest on health and healing, including some families with children with autism benefit from dogs. Also, your lifestyle directly determines the quality and quantity of the microbes in your gut, the surprising nutritional impact of maple syrup, pure maple syrup. Also, the latest on GMO, including good news from Vermont. I'll give you the latest on that. And also, we got some really polluted water in New York City. Most people are not aware of that. And if you get radiotherapy, that's radiation treatment for cancer, breast cancer, there's a greater risk of developing lung cancer. Also, the most likely problems that could be solved with simplicity from Michio Kaku. I'll give you the latest on that. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. First, I'd like to say congratulations to all of the concerned citizens of Vermont who lobbied their legislators and said, we want to know if the food we're eating contains genetically modified organisms. Well, yesterday, the Vermont legislature, the Senate, voted 26-2 for genetically modified labeling. The Senate gave that decisive victory, and that will require labeling of foods that contain genetically modified ingredients. And that's a very strong indication that Vermont could become the first state in the nation to enact such a law. Quote from the Senate President Pro Temp, we are saying people have a right to know what's in their food. He is right. Now let's hope that Connecticut and Maine and other states that have passed food labeling laws but both delayed implementation until neighboring states join them. Now that was a way for the GMO industry to hope that you wouldn't have four states in a given area pass the laws. It looks like, however, that's the case. So that's good. Pancreatic cancer is one of the most painful and lethal forms of cancer. There is nothing that orthodox medicine has that can reverse it once it gets progressed. But there is something that is natural that can stop lethal pancreatic cancer. According to GreenMedInfo, Sarah G., there's a study published in Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine entitled Effect of Wasabi Component 6, Hexyl Isothiocyanate and Derivatives on Human Pancreatic Cancer Cells. What it shows is that the Japanese horseradish concoction known as wasabi, I'm sure many of you have had it in Chinese or Japanese restaurants, very, very tart, but it actually fights highly lethal pancreatic cancer by striking at the very root cause of cancer malignancy. So this was a group of researchers in Taiwan, and they did this research. So good news that they were able to stop that and have a successful treatment in about 25% of the aggressive end-stage cancers. So that's wasabi. Also, if you are a pre-diabetic or a diabetic, your risks of heart attack and stroke, of depression and cancer, of dying, are substantially increased, about 8 years, shorter lifespan. But the trouble is most people are not aware that they're pre-diabetic. When you're overweight, you run the risk of being pre-diabetic. However, since most adults are overweight, and upwards of 40% are obese, then we have to assume that a lot of those people who've never had their blood sugar checked are running this risk. This is from Johns Hopkins University. Here's what it has to say. This is published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. Quote, alarming increases in black and Hispanics and the elderly. Obesity partly to blame. Cases of diabetes and prediabetes in the United States have nearly doubled since 1988. And that's according to this latest research, with obesity apparently to blame for the surge. Researchers also found that the burden of the disease has not hit all groups equally, with alarming increases in diabetes in blacks, Hispanics, and the elderly. Now, why? Well, it's relatively straightforward. Look at the quality of the food that people consume today versus, let's say, 25, 30 years ago. At, let's say, 1975 to 1980, individuals who had migrated from the South or the Midwest to opportunities in the Northeast, but also in the Midwest, like Chicago, Detroit, New York, Boston, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, they were bringing with them the remnants of a pretty good diet. Lots of fruits and vegetables. Yes, there were foods like fried foods that was still prominent, but they hadn't relied exclusively or heavily upon those. There was not a lot eaten out. Today, almost 50% of all the food that people consume comes from fast food restaurants. And we know that these are loaded with saturated fat, animal proteins, and sugars. They're terrible on the digestive system. And what they're going to do is they're going to create problems with sugar. And hence we end up with diabetes or prediabetes. So what you have is you have those that are educated and health conscious. They don't have prediabetes or diabetes at all. But those who are not do. And the older a person gets, the less likely they are to grow their own food, go to farmers markets, eat wholesome, healthy food, slow food, and bring it home and prepare it. In fact, the art of food preparation is a lost art. And only those that are really into food, and by the way, that's not the people that watch the food shows on television. The surveys show that those people like watching other people prepare food, but they themselves don't. So we have this dichotomy. And then you take a closer look at the quality of the foods and the environment, and it's all superficial. Why, for example, do you need to prove that you can make a particular dish in 5 minutes or 20 minutes? What is the whole point of having people compete against a clock? That takes away the whole joy of slow cooking. In fact, any of you who've ever traveled to other cultures know that they don't rush their food, either in the selection, the growing, or the preparation or consuming. They take their time. In the United States now, it's all about beating the clock and beating the competition, which creates a hyper-anxious anger, a palpable anger on the set. People yelling and cursing at each other. And even in this program about taking a failed restaurant and in 2 days, 48 hours, making it over to a grand opening where everybody comes in with their eyes closed, opens their eyes and go, oh my goodness, look at how beautiful this is. And then the customers love everything. That's an artificial construct. Yes, they do make the store over and generally looks a lot better than what it did before. And I certainly give them high marks for that. But the idea that it must all be done under enormous tension with conflict, that's just foolish. There's no need for that. Because then everything has to be done the same way. And of course you realize where that goes. Where you have 20 minutes to make a meal, then it's 15, then it's 10. And why? What is the purpose? So, where everyone's either a winner or a loser. And needless to say, people are not then going out and making healthy gourmet meals. And yet you can. Go to the farmer's market on a Saturday and just look at the number of people there and look at their ages. Talk with them. I filmed them on several occasions. They tend to be much more into health. They tend to like to take their time eating. They're not afraid to experiment. They generally have a variety of different cookbooks from different cultures. And if they're in a relationship, they share that experience together. That's why we have an epidemic. We have a lot of lonely people who eat out, who don't like to cook, and are not into health. For women, a new study shows that by having some iron, you could boost your physical performance. This is from the Journal of Nutrition, University of Melbourne. Quote, scientific evidence from 22 randomized controlled trials indicates that daily iron supplementation can significantly boost exercise performance in women. Quote, these benefits are clearest in iron-deficient and trained women. University of Oxford and Alfred Hospital in Melbourne did this study. They came up with all these findings about iron. Well, if you're taking your green vegetables or juices that contain greens, and especially kale, spinach, watercress is outstanding. Also, collard greens and Swiss chard, then you're going to get your iron. What is the most important B complex? Depends. B1, 2, 3, 5, 6, and 12. I say it's thiamine or vitamin B1. And it does a lot of good things, including maintaining healthy cellular metabolism. Now, you can get thiamine in whole grains, brown rice, oatmeal, rye, sunflower seeds, kale, asparagus. If you eat flesh products, then you also get it in eggs. And it was discovered back in 1905 by William Fletcher. And he found that the whole rice, the unpolished rice, which contained the bran, could help prevent the disease known as beriberi, which is a neurological and cardiovascular disorder associated with eating white rice. Interesting how they found this out, because throughout much of Chinese and Japanese history, rice was the staple food. And around that, depending upon affluency and availability, you might have fish or meat or vegetables. But the ruling elite wanted to have something that showed that they were different, so they considered white to be more pure. So they gave the brown rice and different varieties. There were over 2,000 varieties of rice at one time. They gave the whole rice to the peasants, considering a inferior product, not fit for royalty. Now in Europe, they had white sugar. They would, where the poors would have the sugar cane, and where you could soak sugar cane, and you would find that the liquid, like a water that you soaked it in, would be slightly sweet. But they didn't want something that was sugar cane. That was considered peasant food. They also didn't want vegetables. Almost never ate salads. Would occasionally have fruits, whereas the peasant had to eat whole grains, like rye and oatmeal, and root vegetables, which was very common. And a simple reason you could have root vegetables, because the root vegetable, parsnips, turnips of different types, could stay in the ground all year. Hence, you only had to harvest them when you were going to consume them. And generally what would happen is that they would either brush off the dirt, or they would just dunk the item, a potato or an onion, into some water and wipe it off. There was no water faucets as we have today. And people didn't have the same concern about hygiene. As a result, no one ever washed their hands. Not a physician delivering a baby and then going over and doing an autopsy on a corpse. In fact, one of the reasons that there was as high as a 50-6% death of not only the baby but the mother because of mass infections from the doctor's hands. If they couldn't see something, they didn't believe it was there. In fact, the person who first said that there's these microbes was considered not just eccentric, but a danger. Do any of you know his name? Begins with an S. If you do, call in 888-874-4888. Anyhow, he was ridiculed, mocked, and literally driven out of his science. But he was right, and they were wrong. Also, just imagine when you woke up and you lived in a village. You had no toilet. You had to go in a bucket. The bucket was then filled by other members of the family. Then you just took it outside and you threw it. No hole was dug and buried it. You just threw it. Of course, that was going to be there till it biodegraded down, which would be some time. So in hot weather, imagine how offensive the odor would be. But how would you know it? Because more often than not, people never brushed their teeth. They would have had rotten gums, gingivitis, massive bad breath. They wouldn't have flossed their teeth. They wouldn't have washed their hands. They wouldn't have washed their body. They would rarely, sometimes not even once in a year, would they actually bathe their body. There was no toilet paper. As a result, they had no way of cleaning themselves. So there was just rank hygiene. Of course, when they would touch food, that would also contaminate. But it wasn't just humans contaminated food. They would leave the bread or cheese or meat, whatever they didn't eat, since they had no refrigeration, they would just leave it out on a table. Well, that night, rats would come in and feed off of it, and that created disease as well. And the grains would frequently ferment, because the moment you have moisture in the air, grains will sprout and ferment. Well, one of the byproducts of sprouted rye is an aflatoxin, which is very neurotoxic. And as a result, a lot of people would start to hallucinate and talk in gibberish, and they would be considered possessed. So one of the ways that people were frequently persecuted, prosecuted, even killed during the Inquisition period was because they were suffering from aflatoxin contamination. Now, interesting enough, 1,000 years before this, this wasn't the case, because the Egyptians, the Romans, the Greeks knew how to store items, what kind of seal to put on the items so that moisture would not get in, how to make it vermin-proof by keeping rats out. This was all a part of what they did right. Unfortunately, we call it the Dark Ages because they had destroyed the institutions of higher education. They had destroyed the great library, including the greatest library, the Library of Alexandria, with over 2 million manuscripts. So they lived in total stupidity all the time. And they suffered from multiple nutrient deficiencies, not the least of which was vitamin C. And so that even exacerbated their fatigue and bleeding from simple wounds and wounds that wouldn't heal. But here were the royalty. And the royalty in each of these countries had pretty much the idea, give the grains, give the vegetables to the peasants. And when they eat meat in Europe, they like to eat the organ meat, the liver, the kidneys, the brain, and sweets and alcohol. Well, that flooded the body with purines and the oxalates. And as a result, they suffer from massive gout. And they would have long eating points where they would eat and party and socialize, then sometimes go to a series of buckets or a trough and throw up and then come back and eat again. By any standard today, they'd be eating equivalent to a Thanksgiving meal or two per day, but none of it healthy. So they had a lot of heart disease. They didn't live long lives. And their remedy at the time for gout was to cut the neck of a bird and have the bird's blood poured on the sore, and that was supposed to heal it. Of course, that led to thousands upon thousands of birds being killed. Every pet bird, everything that it flew, would be killed. Of course, that did nothing to help it because of the purines. And also they ended up with beriberi and pellagra, both in Europe and among the elite class in China and Japan. So one of the reasons you want vitamin B1, thiamine, is because it helps with sugar metabolism, brain function, And it also is important for the synthesis of acetylcholine, which is a neurotransmitter, and gamma aminobutyric acid, or GABA, which is an inhibitory amino acid. Both of those are important. So that's just some of the things thiamine can do. Now, another nutrient that is important is melatonin. And we now know it does more than just help us get a good night's sleep and help the immune system. It all helps with bone loss. Now, bone loss is a serious condition. And bone loss leads to fractures. What's now shown that melatonin, along with vitamins D, magnesium, calcium, and K2, all help remineralize your bones, make them stronger, and that helps in a big way. So, another reason. And finally, royal jelly is a very important healing agent. The latest is published in the Chinese Journal of Integrative Medicine, and it shows that royal jelly has the ability to help maintain blood sugar levels while controlling oxidative stress. In other words, royal jelly can be beneficial in preventing and even reversing type 2 diabetes. So that is good. Also, tomorrow I'll give you the latest information on a Chinese herb that helps with hepatitis C. And in fact, I'll do that right now, because we have a lot of people in this audience. In fact, there are millions upon millions of Americans that suffer from hepatitis B and hepatitis C. And I have the same way that I approach both of them. And this particular Chinese herb was very positive in some research. And this is from the International Liver Congress. And identifies a new compound called SBEL1. That's SBEL1, and it can inhibit hepatitis C virus activity in cells at several points in the virus's life cycle. And it was isolated from Chinese herbal medicine that was found to inhibit HCV activity by almost 90%. And it's extracted, SBEL1 is extracted from an herb found in certain regions of Taiwan and southern China. In Chinese medicine, it's used to treat sore throats and inflammations. And the function of SBEL1 within the plant is unknown, but it's been investigated and used in Chinese medicine for a long time. So they found that it knocks out the hepatitis C virus, and that's what's important. So it was very highly effective, according to a professor, Marcus Peck, Radosevic, Secretary General of the European Association for the Study of Liver, and also Associate Professor of Medicine, University of Vienna. Quote, people infected with hepatitis C are at risk of developing severe liver damage, including liver cancer and cirrhosis. In the past, less than 20% of all hepatitis C patients were treated because of the poor availability of the orthodox treatments, but now this was very beneficial. So that's the latest. So all you have to do is just reach out to someone who offers Chinese medicine, and they'll be able to help you get it. All right, that's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Gary Null. Just a reminder that on Sunday at 9 o'clock at 5th Avenue and 90th Street, our running and walking club will be training people to get into excellent condition, as well as just training for the New York City Marathon, either or. You don't have to train for the marathon. Some people want to. We'll be training for that. But some people just want to get in good shape, and we'll certainly be doing that. It's free. It's a public service. Before we go to our calls, and we're going to say hello to Judy from Pennsylvania, who has the answer to the question, who told us that those microorganisms that no one could see could cause death and get sick from them?
Dr. Semmelweis.
Semmelweis, you're right, Judy.
Okay.
How'd you know that?
Oh, I've known it for years and years and years.
Good. What kind of work do you do?
Well, right now I'm retired.
How much are you making?
But right now I'm making mock chicken, by the way.
Good.
No, I was at an aide in with special ed children.
Excellent. Well, thank you. I appreciate you calling in and sharing that.
Thank you. We appreciate you very much.
By the way, as a special ed teacher retired, a new study from the University of Missouri showed that many families with autistic children have found that by having a dog, it makes a big difference to help their child. And the reason is, quote, children with autism spectrum disorder often struggle with interacting with others, which can make it difficult for them to form friendships. Children with autism may especially benefit from interacting with dogs, which can provide unconditional, non-judgmental love and companionship to the children. Dogs can help children with autism by acting as a social lubricant. For example, children with autism may find it difficult to interact with neighborhood children. If the children with autism invite their peers to play with their dogs, then the dogs can serve as a bridge that help the children with autism communicate with their peers. Good idea. I really support that. What do you think of this? And then I'd like you to call in and share your thoughts on this. This is from the New York Times, from Joseph Goldstein. It's called Adding Insult to Gun Injuries. Police often handcuff victims. Quote, 2 days after he was shot as a victim, Andrew Daly woke in a haze with a police officer standing by his hospital bed in Brooklyn. Quote, I'm thinking he's going to talk about the incident that happened to me, how I got shot. Mr. Daly, 29, recently recalled, but the officer was not there to interview Mr. Daly. He had come to arrest him over an unpaid summons. He's telling me now I'm a prisoner of New York City because I have a warrant. Mr. Daly spent more than a week immobilized, not just by his 3 bullet wounds, but also by a set of handcuffs and ankle restraints, all because of an unpaid $25 fine when he had a cup of wine in public. Mind you, not drunk, just had a cup with some wine in it. What happened to Mr. Daly in December is no fluke. The New York City Police Department routinely performs warrant checks on shooting victims. If an outstanding warrant is found, the police generally handcuff and shackle the victim, often for the whole hospital stay, no matter how minor the underlying offense or grievance. Quote, that's the procedure, the department said. So let me get this right. Let's say you have a ticket for jaywalking. And it's $25. And you're shot by a robber, and you go to the hospital. You'll now be arrested. You'll be handcuffed. You'll be put in restraint. And a police officer will have to watch you 24/7. And that is okay, they say. What do you think? Give us a call. I'd like to hear your response. 888-874-4888. Now we have more to go. As always, we have lots of insights on different topics, and including some comments from Michio Kaku from Washington Blog. preventable for the small amount of money. What's he talking about? An Armageddon? I'll tell you that in a few moments. But just coming in the studio right now is our executive producer of our documentary division, Valerie. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Gary. Well, I just wanted to let you know the results were finally posted just now on the WorldFest International Film and Video Festival. And I want to let you know and everyone out there that you've won the special jury award for your film Silent Epidemic, The Untold Story of Vaccines, and Chew on This, Dangers of the American Diet. And the special jury award is the highest award that they give at the World Fest. And this is above the platinum, the gold, the bronze, the silver. So it's a really wonderful, prestigious award that you've been given. And a little backstory on the World Fest. It's one of the most prestigious festivals in the world. It was founded 50 years ago. And its mission statement is to recognize and honor outstanding creative excellence in independent film and video. And some of the other people that have won prizes there, you're in good company, Gary. Ralph Bashy, Carol Ballard, the Coen brothers, Brian De Palma, Jonathan Demme, John Frankenheimer, Charles Guggenheim, Hal Hartley, Ann Lee, Spike Lee, George Lucas, David Lynch, John Sayles, Ridley Scott, Steven Spielberg, and Oliver Stone. So you're in good company. And this world, they at the fest, they had only 55 premieres, which we were in, and that was out of 4,500 people who entered films from 37 countries all over the world. So the independent people are recognizing us. And then, you know, I just want to say that, you know, our films, we've chosen to tell the truth, and it's not always really commercially viable. But that's what we've been doing, and we focus on social issues that can change our lives and hopefully change the lives of the world. And you've done this great work in investigating, reporting, and articles, broadcast, documentaries on all these underreported subjects, but really important things like nuclear power, the dangers of the industrial military complex, of the medical complex, the safety and efficacy of vaccines, hydrofracking, GMOs, abuses in mental health, the politics of AIDS, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, globalization, poverty, drugging our children, Gulf War syndrome, depleted uranium, its consequences on our vets and on civilians, the privatization of public assets, peak oil, peak water, peak soil, just to name a few of the many topics, Gary, that you have covered. And so a great and hearty congratulations to you.
Well, keep in mind that Richard Gale and Jeremy, yourself as the person that works every day, think of all the people, Richard Polonesky, all the editors, Manette Loudon, who has spent countless hours working on each of these projects. Once I'm finished with the writing and filming, then comes the part of putting it all together. As you could imagine, our latest film, which is on poverty, which will be premiering this summer, it's so massive because we're talking about poverty worldwide. How do we get there? What's involved? Trying to select people who are not going to share a polemic, but rather just the truth, as you said. That's what we're about, just the truth. So I'm happy that at least our films are getting the attention. I was looking up on the internet this morning, and we have tens of millions of people who are seeking out now information on these films, and that helps them. So as a social tool, that's the point of the exercise, whether it's in helping to get legislation to stop the genetic engineering, or at least label it, that helps people. So I'm bypassing the entire environmental movement. I feel the entire environmental movement has been corrupted. I believe we have to go back to the grassroots to let people take power over the choices when it comes to the environment. But also I believe that that's going to be the same with changing social issues. Get the people involved. I don't trust any of these major organizations because there's too much egotism, self-serving, infighting that the public never knows about. But that's why we don't see any real change. And so now documentaries, investigative reporting series, white papers, specials, on here's the problem, here are some solutions. Add to it, modify it, change it, but do something with it. It's time that we became, all of us, proactive. Thanks, and thank everyone who contributed.
I certainly will. Thank you, Gary.
Let's say hello before I go to the commentary to Tim in Madison. Hi,
Tim.
Hi,
Gary.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. I think that the behavioral patterns of law enforcement are completely unacceptable. This has been increasing as time has been going by and becoming more and more egregious and outrageous.
Have you personally experienced it?
I and friends of mine as well.
In what way?
Well, I don't know if my friend would want me to tell the account that happened to him, but I can say that I've encountered a steady flow of completely inappropriate harassments, attempts to arrest me for drugs that I never had, searches, unwarranted searches, on a just continuous basis.
Well, at least you're awakened to the issue. Think of all the people who are not even wanting to know that this is a problem.
Well, I'm wondering if this might have something to do if they're actually running trial runs of the when Jesse Ventura did that investigative research at the facility of the hybrids between the humans and chimp and human and gorilla facility, if they're actually putting these entities out into the public and running trial runs with them or something from these behavioral patterns.
No, I can see no evidence whatsoever for that. I simply see what has happened when power is given to people without accountability, and then people act out based upon what they believe is their right to act out, no different than if you saw it with the Occupy group, how they were treated, maced, beaten, how they were manhandled, and also those who spoke out, and I was one of those who was marching against the World Trade Organization, and how they were treated, and at the Democrat and Republican conventions, how they were only given little free speech areas that were way away from anything, as if that was the only place that you could legally exercise your right of protest. I just see the fascism occurring everywhere at every level, and I believe that we have to address it if it's going to slow down or change. I thank you for your call. Now, before we go to our next issue, I have just a special here today. I have two, actually. The first one, I don't remember offering this in a long time. It's an anti-inflammatory herbal blend of all these important anti-inflammatory agents, including hyaluronic acid and a pine bark, white willow bark, grape leaf extract, devil's claw, root extract, cat's claw, many special herbs blended in this anti-inflamed joint support. It's Circle K Kosher. And with that today is the documentary Reverse Arthritis and Pain Naturally. The two together, it's only $39.99. You're saving 60% off the retail price. So this will help a lot of them. This is a natural herbal blend, plus a video. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. But also, we were out because they're all made by hand. There's no shortcut on this. And on the water filter. And people love them. I think everybody has gotten those already. But here's what's brand new. The Twin Slim Water Filter. This is the ultra ceramic with heavy metal cleansing to reduce any chemicals you don't want in there. And this ceramic filter is designed to remove parasites, bacteria, chlorine, chlorine byproducts, chloramine, fluoride, mercury, lead, particulate, turbidity, numerous heavy metals. In fact, we posted, I think, 212 different contaminants that this takes out in the laboratories that showed this at levels that no one else ever has out there. For example, we're the only filter I'm aware of that can remove MTBE, the herbicides such as glyphosate, Roundup, and nitrates. And the ceramic filter is uniquely cleanable, preventing regrowth of microorganisms trapped in the filter that others would. And the housing is made from a food-grade, non-leachable material. Comes with two filters, housing with a spigot, and then we show how much it gets out in an actual chart from the labs, like parasites and bacteria. That's one of my biggest concerns with water. Well, this gets it out 99.999%. Turbidity, 99%. Lead, 99%. Chlorine, 99%. Chloramine, 99%. Particulates, 99.99%. And fluoride, nickel, aluminum, arsenic, cadmium, all this, it gets out. So I know of no other water filter. It's smaller. It's more unique. It's beautifully designed. It is it's very futuristic looking. And it's only 9 inches tall, 4 inches wide. It's special. So you compare this with anything else out there. You look to see if they get rid of the pharmaceuticals and the herbicides and the pesticides and the heavy metals and the chemicals. We do. And we have the lab reports to prove it. But just to add a few thoughts onto this is Dr. Roy Spicer. Dr. Spicer is an expert in water technology. He's worked for the state of New Jersey and also from Rutgers University, and he has done the research on all the water filters out there. And we only have, I believe, 24 filters. That's it. It'll take about another 4 to 6 weeks to have more made because they are made by hand. How are you today, Roy?
Very good, Gary. Nice to be on your show. One thing that came up very recently, and you mentioned the bacteria, this came up in New York City recently in a report from the New York Times. They found E. coli bacteria in these rooftop water towers. Now, this is these water towers service millions of people in New York City as well as other areas in the country, and they tested the water and found E. coli, which is found in the feces of mammals and birds. Now, that's unbelievable. 5 out of the 12 buildings they tested in Manhattan, Queens, and Brooklyn found E. coli in the tanks. So if you have one of your water filters, the E. coli tests that were done on this filter are exceptional. When you say 99.9999%, it was really 100%. And that's the only filter I know of. And being a microbiologist, this is exceptional. So even if you had a storm or after Hurricane Sandy when there was sewage in the water supplies, this filter could take out the sewage bacteria, E. coli. In addition, because it's been tested against pharmaceuticals, and one of the studies I just read, they're finding pharmaceuticals in 41 water systems that were tested. That means you could have anywhere from 2 to 10 or more pharmaceuticals in trace amounts. And the filter was tested against a whole range of drugs. As a matter of fact, 17 drugs were tested, and all of them were removed greater than 96%. So that's, you know, in addition to all the contaminants you mentioned, this is up to state-of-the-art removal of the contaminants that are now emerging in the water systems in the United States. So there's nothing better that I've reviewed. This is an exceptional filter system.
Thank you, Roy. By the way, I just came across the New York Times, Inside City Water Tanks, Layers of Neglect, by Ray Rivera and Frank Rumian, and it talks about how polluted the water is. And the people would not suspect it's polluted. It's got all this feces in there. So anyhow, now you can give a call if you'd like it. But again, please, we only have 24. We'll get more in maybe 6 to 8 weeks. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Thank you, Roy. And finally, just this program announcement. This Saturday, I'm going to be doing a 2-hour lecture from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for all of our listeners all over the world. We're fold up in the studio itself, but you can watch it just by going to progressiveradionetwork.com. You'll be able to watch it and listen to it at 3 o'clock. Now, if there's so many people get on, We're hoping, as last time we had so many thousands of people go on at the same time, that the line went down. But we've doubled our capacity as of yesterday, Brian, and our chief engineer. So you're going to enjoy this lecture, a lot of new insights. This is from the Washington blog. Well-known physicist, who also has a radio program on the station, Michio Kaku, and other members of the American Physical Society, asked Congress to appropriate $100 million to harden the country's electrical grid against solar flares. Now, Congress refused. Professor Kaku explains that a solar flare like the one that hit the U.S. in 1859 would, in the current era of nuclear power and electrical refrigeration, cause widespread destruction and chaos. Not only could such a flare bring on hundreds of Fukushima-type earthquakes, accidents, but it could well cause food riots globally. Professor Kaku explains that relief came in for people hit by disasters like Katrina or Hurricane Sandy from the outside. But a large solar flare would knock out a lot of the power nationwide. So, as people's food spoils due to a lack of refrigeration, and emergency workers from other areas would be too preoccupied with their own local crisis to help, there would, in short, be no cavalry to the rescue of much of the country. In fact, NASA scientists are predicting that a solar storm will knock out most of the electrical power grid in many countries worldwide, perhaps for months. This is some of the news from around the world. A study by the National Academy of Sciences warned that a massive geomagnetic assault on satellites and interconnected power grids could result in a blackout from which the nation may need 4 to 10 years to recover. That's our National Academy of Science. And by the way, a geomagnetic is a solar burst. Also, a U.S. Geological Survey report estimates that a 6% chance of another Carrington event, that's referring to the one in 1859 that was so strong that telegraph lines and towers and stations caught fire around the world, that it could occur in the next, let's say, the next 6 years. But we do know now that it's going to happen. We just don't know when. University of Kansas physicist Adrian Mellett proposed that material from a solar megafire 10 times the strength of the Carrington one, 1859, would bombard the planet, and it did in 775. This is not just a theoretical fear. The Earth has narrowly missed being crisped by large solar flares several times in the last couple of years. For example, the Los Angeles Times reported last month, quote, "The Earth barely missed the perfect solar storm that could have smashed into our magnetic field and wreaked havoc with our satellite systems, electronics, and power systems, potentially causing trillions of dollars in damage," according to data from NASA's Stereo A spacecraft. Separately, if the solar onslaught had occurred just 9 days earlier, it would have rivaled the 1859 Carrington effect. Observations of such a solar superstorm during a very weak solar cycle indicate that extreme events are not as infrequent as we imagine. That's them. And then a meteorologist, Jeff Masters, noted, quote, "We had the very real possibility that a geomagnetic storm, or storms, of an intensity that happened before and will happen again, could knock out the power to tens of millions of Americans for multiple years. The electrical grids in Europe and Northern Asia have similar vulnerabilities. So a huge, years-long global emergency affecting hundreds of millions of people and costing many trillions of dollars might result from a repeat of the 1859 or 1921 geomagnetic storms." Masters points out that the U.S. electrical grid is extremely vulnerable. Computer model study showing electrical systems that might be affected by a geomagnetic storm, the regions outlined by this graph show how it could last for years. So here's the takeaway message. our electrical grid all throughout the United States is breaking down. It has not been updated. The resources have been spent on wars and military contracts, but not on our electrical grid. So earlier this year, when I was suggesting that people at least prepare in case there is an electrical storm, many people did. Many people did the reasonable and prudent thing. Now, mind you, whatever they prepared is still there, and it's in place. So if they don't have to use it, good. But if they do, at least they'll have their backpack and they'll have their food reserves, etc. But how close did it come? It came when America or the world was just out of the cycle. But if we had been in an orbit 9 days earlier, we'd have been just crippled. Life as we know would have ceased to exist. We would have been out of water and out of food within 48 hours. You wouldn't have had a store with anything in it. Candles, flashlights, depending upon the time of year. Think if it's a summertime and no air conditioning. Think if it's a wintertime and no heat. No transportation except for the gas you got in your car. But where are you going to go when so many people are going to have run out of gas on the highways? So that's how close we came. So is it going to happen? Yes. All the science shows, yes, it is. Would it knock out our grid? If we have a bad one, it will, because our grid is so vulnerable. But could it be changed? You bet. And that's what all these scientists, including Professor Kaku, stated, that it could be changed just with $100 million put into our infrastructure to change how our grid works. So if one part of the grid is hit, knocked out, another part would not be. So to save trillions of dollars, we invest $100 million. But they don't want to invest a penny. So much for the people in our government caring about us. Separately, this is interesting. This comes from Truthout, Mark Carlin, quote, criminalizing people who live in cars, quote, the war on the homeless, in which some cities have passed laws outlawing giving food to the homeless, not to mention long-standing laws against vagrancy, has taken a new turn. Now some municipalities are outlawing living in cars or other vehicles, your own car. People who live in cars are one step above complete homelessness. Denying them the shelter that an automobile provides is another cruel step in the war against people without economic means. Such actions give the term, quote, the war on poverty, a whole new perspective. Punishments for not having enough money to afford increasing rents. The growing war on car dwellers is featured in an April 8th article in the Wall Street Journal. Nearly 70 cities now are cracking down and putting in place laws on people whose vehicles have become their only place to stay. From the journal, quote, for months now, Mr. Smith, a former information technology specialist, has feared he might lose his current home, which is stationed on a street near a quiet Palo Alto park. An ordinance passed by Palo Alto last year would punish him for living in his vehicle with a $1,000 fine and 6 months in jail. Quote, you're at risk of losing everything. It's a weird feeling that until you've lived this way, you don't realize what it's like. End quote. So, first, I saw this firsthand when I was filming a group of homeless vets at a stand down, which is where they come, and other veterans from clear back the Korean War and the Vietnam War were there to give them some help for the day. And this happens once, possibly twice a year. And for the people who had been living homeless in the woods, which most of them did, this was a big day for them. And they stayed in line for hours to get inside to get a... Well, they had some shirts, and they'd been donated by other people. And they could get a haircut. And they were... had a dentist that would look at their mouth but couldn't do anything, but at least tell him what he saw. So I spent the whole day there filming and interviewing people. And one truck that was there, it was all helping them with some food. They would put the food in a shopping bag and give it to them. And the woman made a comment to one of the other people, and I was just standing right there, and I heard it. And so I said, I'm sorry that I wasn't intentionally overhearing it. I just want to make sure I heard you. Did you say that you're not allowed now as a church, a recognized established church, to give these people or any other homeless people a meal? She said, that's correct. And I said, why? She said, well, our church is a part of our outreach program to help the poor and those in need. We offer on Sundays, if you go to the public park where you have the little food shelter, we set up a table and our church parishioners and stand there and they hand people food. And then the people always sit very grateful. They bring back the empty plates and whatnot, and we bag it all. And when we leave, you'd never know we were there. But now they've made that against the law. We will be arrested. And so that's true all over the place. And this is in Orlando she was referring to. And I thought, why? Well, there was a mayor there. And it's an interesting confrontation if you watch it. Because the mayor was saying one thing, and the head vet down there who's trying to help the others, George Taylor, had something else to say to him. And I just asked, is it true that you got the sheriff and some bulldozers and city employees, and you went to their little homeless tent area in the woods, and you bulldozed down everything? You didn't even allow them to take their clothes. And one guy, whose only work is as a he's a person that works in trees, trimming trees. He had his belt and his security belt and boots and all that, and you just bulldozed everything, including one guy whose father was a World War II vet, and his father was killed, and he always had his flag that his father was a coffin was in, and you bulldoze it. You buried the guy's father's flag. He just shrugged his shoulders. And I said, well, what exactly is the intent? These guys are poor. They have no support system. They don't even know where their next meal is going to come from. So you did what the city council permits or suggests. There's no sense of common sense, reason. And again, this you'll see in the film, nothing. So now we've gone one step further. Don't let the poor or homeless have a place to stay. Don't let them sleep in a church at night if it's cold and freezing out. There's an ordinance against it. And now, for all the millions of Americans who have no home, it's been foreclosed on, and they're staying in their car, now they're going to arrest them, put them in jail for 6 months, fine them $1,000. Well, that makes absolutely perfect sense if you're a bureaucrat, mindless, robotic cretin. But if you're actually a part of the human race, it's vile. It's reprehensible. It's unethical. It's immoral. I cannot tell you the contempt I find for people who use bureaucracies and the laws of bureaucracies to justify this form of punishment against people who are at the bottom of everything. But that's my thoughts. And we're out of time. I want to thank you for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. We have Luann Panession. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have an interesting email here from Samantha, and she's from California, and I'm intrigued by this question. She says that there are several states that have requested already to secede from the Union. And I know for sure that Alaska was one, and Texas is another. I know there are others, though. And the mainstream media kind of treats them very condescendingly. They kind of poo-poo the whole idea. But there are many states that are beginning to feel that they want to secede from the Union. And she's asking what your thoughts are on this.
None of that will happen in the near future. But I would go to a deeper level, and I would ask, isn't it time that we had a constitutional convention? I believe it is. Isn't it time that we take an honest look at what rights the state should have, the municipalities within a state should have, versus what the federal government should have. Right now, the federal government dominates everything, and they become tyrannical and fascistic in a police state, and we're all aware of that. But then the question is, how can power be given back to the states so that they could have laws that actually govern the state in a more humane way without the impact of lobbyists like the American Legislative Exchange Council, etc., and how they can then protect their citizens to a greater extent and the environment to a greater extent. So that is a conversation we need to have, and we're not having it. But if the question is, should a state be able to secede if it meets certain requirements, that's a legitimate question. And if they want an example of that, why don't they look at Kosovo seceding from Yugoslavia? We had no problem backing them. Now, they'll say it's different circumstances. There was ethnicity issues. But then look at Venice. Venetians send almost $75 billion to Rome annually, and we know how corrupt Rome is at every level, and Rome only gives a small amount of that back in services and investment. And so they now, 89% of Venetians, have recently voted to create their own sovereign state, and they have declared themselves independent from Italy. And it's sparked an enormous interest now by Sardinia to have a referendum, and also Lombardy and Trentino, and also want to join. And look at Scotland. Most Americans are not aware that Scotland was an independent country until 1707, and a national referendum when it became a part of the UK. However, just this past year, in fact, they started a momentum a year ago, but this September they'll vote on it to decide whether they will leave the UK and become independent. And keep in mind, there have been dozens of countries that seceded from their colonial masters, Belgium, France, United Kingdom. Look at Spain. Spain lost Gibraltar in 1704, and now they're saying, we want Gibraltar back. You also have to look at Catalonia and the Basque provinces also have been in long battles, bloody battles with Spain to get their independence. Look at the Falklands, which is, they believe, sovereign to Argentina, and yet we're told, no, it's still part of Britain. So you have to look around the world to realize that there are sovereign movements going on, and if there's legitimacy in them, then it should be open to debate and discussion. Thank you. And now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about peak oil and Hanford in Washington State, America's most contaminated nuclear site.
Right. Also, I saw that an old colleague of yours and someone I've known for a long time passed away last night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm going to do a little comment on that on tomorrow's show. In fact, two people, Michael Rupert, who does the Lifeboat Show on Sunday night, and so we'll give them time they deserve and some input from our perspectives. But right now, Utrice Lead, please stay with us.
I've heard people say that